podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run. Run Run Live presents Real Running Geniuses. Today, we salute you, Mr. Compulsive Exact Mileage Guy.
Mr. Compulsive Exact Mileage Guy!
The rest of the running world settles for the mediocrity of rounding up, but no, not you. You insist on perfection.
Insisting on perfection!
When mere mortals might leave it at 19.77 miles, you make that extra lap around your driveway to get your perfect 20-miler.
Got it, 20, yeah!
So thank you, Mr. Compulsive Exact Mileage Guy, for setting an example the rest of us can only dream of. Your striving for the perfect exactitude of performance keeps the rest of us honest.
Honesty is the best policy!
Hello, my friends, and welcome to episode 54 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. Today, I've got a jam-packed show for you, and I'm not going to waste a lot of time babbling on. I've got a great interview with sports nutritionist Tom Fox. You're going to love it. I've got lots of great random audio. I've got Link from Run Warm. I've got dancing ponies, high wire racks, and a trained bear. So stay with me and try to keep up, all right? My training for this week, pretty good. Same old, ran 15 miles with my buddies on Sunday. But then I got caught in airport hell on Monday and Tuesday with the snowstorms, and I couldn't do my workouts. I briefly considered having some stranger watch my bag so I could run laps in the Cincinnati airport, and I thought that would be a riot, and I wondered if they'd actually come out and try to arrest me for doing it. But unlike Ultra Dad, I carry my running shoes with me at all times. I don't check. So I didn't. No one wants to watch a stranger's bags these days. So instead, I bought and read the Dean Koontz book. Pretty good book. The Good Guy. Decent book. Moves right along. Since I missed my workouts on those 2 days, I decided to double up on Wednesday and Thursday. Did a nice set of hard quarter miles on the treadmill for lunch on Wednesday, and then went to the inner track with my club on Wednesday night. Did another easy run. Then Thursday, same thing. Did a set of tempo miles on the treadmill at lunch, and then went for an easy run in the evening with my buddies. And it all added up to around 24 miles in 2 days. So I feel like I should be running more quality, but other than that, I'm okay. And Thursday night we ran, it was like 0 degrees out. It was awful. I had to take Buddy with me because he's starting to get depressed from not getting out enough. He just sits in the house all day. You know, he's watching soap operas, sitting on the couch eating bonbons in his bathrobe. He's getting fat, so I had to get him out. It was so cold. I mean, there's a new circle of hell for people who run in that kind of weather. I'm glad that next month, Crocus will be pushing up and we'll get a little warmer here in New England. So we've got a bunch of ground to cover today, folks, and I think you're going to like it. I hope you're wearing your good shoes, because we got to go on with the show.
Hey, this is Chris, and I hope the wind isn't too bad here. You know, you can hear it howling in the palm trees. I'm up in Long Beach, looking across the Long Beach Harbor, I guess, at the Queen Mary. Took a picture so I could prove it. Up Catalina Island. Wind's really howling, but it's like 75, 80 degrees, and it's so sunny out. And the glare is really bright on my eyes. The only thing brighter would be me taking my shirt off. The reflection would probably put people's eyes out. I'll tell you my funny Long Beach story. I came out here on Wednesday night. Tuesday night, because I was supposed to come out Wednesday night for this presentation I had this morning. It's Thursday. And I looked at the weather. It's going to snow like crazy all day on Wednesday in Boston. So I hopped an earlier flight, came out. Figure if you're going to get caught, you want to be caught someplace warm. Working on my presentation, had it all ready to go. Got up this morning, you know, about 5 o'clock a.m. local time, which would be 8 o'clock East Coast time. Went over the slides and the presentation with my guy in Istanbul. who was going to be doing it, helping me today. And I said, okay, great, got some last-minute changes, ready to go. Went out for a run, about 8 o'clock local time here. I'm out running around Long Beach, and now my phone rings. And it's my guy in Istanbul saying, are you sure that presentation's at 12 noon Pacific or 12 noon Eastern? And I look at my watch, and it's like 8:10. And I'm like, well, I think they said 12 noon Pacific. So then I get an email from the lady going, you know you're supposed to be here at 9 a.m. Pacific, right? I was like, oops. So anyhow, I ran back to the hotel and got showered and changed and was there at 9:15. No muss, no fuss. Put my suit on. Slam dunk on the presentation, great presentation, and now I find myself with nothing to do this afternoon, so I'm going to go put in some miles. My hamstring was killing me on Tuesday. I tweaked something, sort of like upper hamstring, some little muscle. It wasn't a hand, some little muscle bit, but I stretched it out a little bit, and it feels fine now. As long as I don't do any speed work, I think I'm going to be good. So I'm not in the Long Beach part of Long Beach. I'm in the part down by the aquarium, down by the harbor. So it's more like a long cement sidewalk than a Long Beach, but I'm going to go out and explore some more, see what I can find. But, you know, when you're traveling, you got to explore.
And now for the equipment check.
Link from Run Warm.
Hi there, Chris.
Great. Hey, so anyhow, my last episode of my show, I actually gave you some props. I said I saw a lady wearing your shoe warmers there. I didn't know what they were, but I gave your website out. So tell us who you are and what you do. Tell us about the shoe gloves.
Well, I'd be glad to, and again, thank you for letting us talk about it. The shoe glove, simply put, it's something built to keep your foot warm and dry when you're running, either in the damp cold or just the cold itself. A lot of people are running with them in the snow, running with them in the rain, and they're just running when it's really cold and windy. It's something that you do not need to alter your shoe. You don't need to wear extra pairs of socks or anything of that nature. It's just something that fits over the top of the shoe, straps underneath. Nothing impacts the ground, nothing changes your gait when you're running. They're lightweight, made out of a Donaldson fabric that is much like a Gore-Tex. It's called Tetra Tex. That is okay. Waterproof and windproof as well.
So
and
with these,
both having an insulation underneath that is to continue to keep the warmth and the cold away from your foot.
So would these work in like trail conditions? Like would they work with a sort of a gator outfit as well?
They would, yes. I've had people actually use them in that sense.
All right. So how did you get into this and how did this come about?
Well, I was out running one day, and a buddy of mine was coming the opposite direction on one of the trails here in Marion, Indiana. And we stopped and was just chatting. I looked down, and he had these things wrapped around his feet effectively, and I started making fun of him and what he was doing. And he was saying, well, he said, my feet get cold. And I said, well, so do mine. So what? It's just what happens. And he goes, well, no. He had taken a pair of sweatpants and a pair of soccer shorts, sewed them together, and it kind of was experimenting, strapping something on. We ended up messing with that for a little bit, come up with something that seemed to work well. And then a group of us who run together in our own little running club started trying these out. Again, I was quite skeptical about it, but he made me wear one on one foot and not any on the other foot. And a mile into the run, I looked at him and I said, okay, give me the other one. I didn't realize how cold my feet actually were and how much I had been putting up and how nice it was to run with your feet warm. We then went and started deciding to turn this into a business, started researching fabric, ran across the fabric of the Tetra Tex, and it met exactly what we wanted to do in terms of being able to provide the warmth as well as provide you protection from the element, and spent a lot of time developing that and prototyping it, wearing and testing it prior to putting it on the market, and then we kind of went and entered into the marketplace.
So if people want warm toes while they're running up here in the brutal New England winter, where do they go?
Well, you can go to a couple things. Primarily, you can get them at runwarm.com. That's all one word, runwarm.com. If you're actually in the Northeast, at Marathon Sports, they're one of the retail stores. They're one of our partners, and you can get them there as well.
All right. Great stuff. Thanks for giving me a couple of minutes, all right?
Well, I appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Ciao.
And now for our featured interview.
All right. We're back.
Okay.
How's it going, Tom?
It's going real good, Chris. Appreciate you calling.
That's great. Hey, so tell us who you are. What do you do?
Okay. I'm currently a professor at Chesapeake College. In my past, I've worked with a number of professional teams. I was a nutritionist for the Washington Capitals hockey team and also worked as a strength and conditioning coach for Washington Redskins.
Cool.
Just written a book on diet, weight loss, health. So all these topics are very important to me, and I used to compete as a professional kickboxer, so I know the level of commitment that some of the athletes you're working with have towards their training.
Great. The reason I want to talk to you is, you know, it looks like you have a pretty sensible program for, you know, one of the things I'm interested in is nutrition, weight, not necessarily weight loss, but, you know, how nutrition plays more into just the overall fitness for people
right.
who are amateur endurance athletes. And it looks like you have a good balanced approach to that. And I also like the fact that you had some real life experience with real athletes. Like, you know, if you look at a professional hockey player, I mean, those
right.
guys, I mean, I used to skate when I was a kid, and
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like, it's like soccer. It's the same sort of thing. You're going the whole time. It's like constantly wind sprints. You must burn,
exactly.
you know, 4,000 calories in a hockey game. I don't know what the number is, but it's a lot.
It is a
and,
lot.
So anyhow, talk to me a little bit about your experience with those kind of guys and what you have to do differently in terms of nutrition for
okay.
people who are trying to perform at some sort of level. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, a couple of things that a lot of endurance athletes don't realize is that while we concentrate on carbohydrates because that's the energy that helps our muscles contract,
right.
there's also a protein requirement, and it appears the research shows that an endurance athlete, especially marathon runner or someone like that, especially when they're increasing their distance, actually needs more protein than even a bodybuilder. I know that sounds kind of crazy,
really?
But bodybuilders, their bodies learn to resynthesize the amino acids, so their protein intake, while they go overboard with it, in my opinion, in some cases not even as high as a marathon runner. So we're going to talk a lot about carbohydrates because that's important, but I wanted to make that point about protein. You have to make sure you're getting enough protein in your diet so your body can rebuild it, because you're constantly pounding your body, and it needs the protein, the amino acids, to rebuild.
Right, but on the other hand, I, you know, what's been really popular over the last, I don't know, what, 5 years, is that sort of, I won't mention any names, but it rhymes with South Beach, sort
yeah.
of high protein, no carbohydrates diet.
Yeah, well, you know, let
me give you a personal experience, because I've tried that.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, if you're still running at the level that I am and doing that, your workouts are going to be crap, and you can't think,
right.
but yeah, you lose weight, like, 10 pounds a day. It's amazing. So what's going on there?
Okay, here's the thing. First of all, with the South Beach diet, I haven't read the whole thing because I stay with research so that I'm not tainted by some of these diets. But my understanding is they cut out all your carbohydrates for a couple of weeks, and you have to still continue to perform, do your regular stuff. Well, the hook there is that when they start letting you have fruits and vegetables, which are the good carbohydrates, you love them so much you're not even thinking about cake and candy and cookies because you're so happy to have bananas and apples and grapes. So, and those carbohydrates, the fruits and vegetables, are where we have the majority of our vitamins, minerals, and fiber, which are important nutrients for the body to function properly. The other thing, which is I find interesting about the South Beach diet, is you're not allowed to drink beer. You can drink wine, but you can't drink beer. So for 90% of the guys, they stop drinking beer, they're going to drop some weight. So there's gimmicks and hooks with all of these different diets.
That's an interesting, just a side note, is I quit drinking beer about 10 years ago, and I was a pretty heavy beer drinker, you know, maybe, you know, a couple of six-packs a week sort of beer drinker, and not the light stuff either. And I didn't notice any weight impact at all by stopping drinking.
Yeah, but you have to understand the caliber athlete you are. Your body is using those calories on a regular basis for your exercise, and it's so intense that you're not going to see a difference, and I would be willing to bet that you replace those empty calories from the beer with other calories, probably more carbohydrates, might even have been better for you because they have more nutrients in them.
You know what? You're exactly right. When I stopped drinking beer, I started having cravings for cakes and cookies and that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, your body needs those calories. You know, there are no bad foods. I mean, the American Dietetic Association, that is their premise. There's no bad foods. There's just only bad amounts of them. And for instance, you can go to McDonald's once a week and have a Big Mac. It's not going to kill you. It's not going to make you fat. But if you go there every day for lunch and then you have their breakfast too, well, obviously you're not going to be able to overcome that influx of calories and the amount of salt and the amount of saturated fat that you're going to get, which is unhealthy. But let's get back to the athletes.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. You're body is constantly burning up your carbohydrate supply in your muscles, and it has to be reloaded. Now, there's a couple things to go with that, and this is really obvious with the hockey athletes because, as you said, they're burning a tremendous amount of calories per workout. And what happens with long-distance runners and people that are really committed to their workouts is they burn a lot of glycogen. Well, okay, here's what happens. Carbohydrates come into your body, whether it's a banana or it's a piece of fruit or it's a complex carbohydrate like whole grain bread. your body breaks it all down to glucose, which is the simplest form of sugar. So anyone that tells you you can't have a banana because it's simple sugar, they don't understand how physiology works. Your body breaks it down to glucose, which is the simplest form of sugar, and then it takes and puts it back in your muscles and in your liver in the form of glycogen. And this is the energy you burn for muscle contraction. So, and I'm sure all the runners know that when you run out of your stores of carbohydrates, you hit the wall, which means you have to burn a higher percentage of fat, and that is a little more painful. So a couple things. One, if you're getting your carbohydrates from fruits, vegetables, whole grain, low-fat dairy, those are the places, like low-fat milk has a lot of carbs in it as well as some protein and some good things, but like your fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, not only are you getting the glycogen back into your muscles, but you're also getting the vitamins and minerals that allow your body to function normally. And one of the things I tell people is your body's just a big science experiment that you're conducting on a daily basis. And in the case of you and your listeners, you're putting some extreme physical challenges on that body, and therefore what you put into it, how you recover, and even the timing of when you eat has an impact on your performance.
Okay, so I see you have sort of a holistic approach of exercise, nutrition, and stress. What's your approach?
Well, I would say this. First of all, so that your body functions normally, even if you're a marathon runner, we know that marathon runners benefit from having some strength training. Certainly, you don't want to gain bulk because that's weight that you have to carry. But a toned athlete is going to perform better than one that does nothing for their upper body. We know that. So there needs to be some strength training. In terms of stress management, every time you exercise, when you're stressed out, you know, you have the fight or flight response. Well, you guys are running, so that's taking care of your flight response, and it's dealing with it in a way that your body is primitively, genetically programmed to deal with stress. So you're sort of okay in that area. The nutrition area is the big deal because our society is inundated with processed food that is low in nutrition, high in calories, and aggressively marketed. And if you're not constantly looking for good foods and paying attention to what you're putting in your body, it is very easy in our society to eat foods that are low in nutrients, and while you're getting the calories you need, which, as you say, even beer, you're burning those calories up, but are you getting the calcium and the magnesium and the phosphorus and these vitamins and minerals that the body is deficient in? To go a little further, the 2005 Dietary Guidelines, the research for that shows that the average American is deficient in vitamin A, E, C, magnesium, potassium, and calcium. Now, if you look for where you would find those vitamins and minerals, fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. So while nutrition is an ongoing science and we're learning more every day, the balanced nutrition from the 1900s of eating a balanced meal and more fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and it's still what we want you to do because all these phytochemicals and flavonoids and whatnot that we now understand are part of those good foods. And my feeling is the supplement companies don't know everything that's in good food. Plus, there are synergistic and antagonistic relationships between vitamins and minerals. And therefore, if you take, you know, more vitamin C, then you need to make sure you take more iron. And if you're taking more calcium, you have to have vitamin D so it's absorbed into your body. If you're eating the foods,
I think what the medical studies are showing on that is any of the point solutions are either ineffective or not as effective. You know, you say, you know, take a vitamin D supplement, for example, it's not the same as taking vitamin D in a whole food because there's all these other indicators, other things that influence how it gets absorbed and used.
That's absolutely correct, Chris. And you're dead on with the research. When they gave people more low-fat milk where they got calcium and vitamin D, they had these increased benefits. When they gave them a vitamin D pill and calcium supplements, they didn't see the same results. So yes, there's probably other synergistic nutrients in there that need to work together that the supplement companies don't know about. And believe me, because in 1994 we had the Dietary Supplement Health Act, what happened was supplements were put in their own category where they were no longer really regulated by the FDA.
I've talked about that before. They don't even have to prove that they're not harmful.
That's correct.
They can be harmful and marketed as whatever you want. There's no regulation on supplements.
Well, and I'll take you further than that. There was a pitcher who actually made it to the bigs and was going to play for Baltimore and was out of weight, I mean overweight and out of shape and was taking ephedra and, you know, not hydrating properly and actually died. And, you know, one of the culprits was this ephedra supplement he was taking. And when they went to the supplement companies and said, you got to take it off, they said, well, we've got a lot more of it to sell. We're going to sell it before we take it from the market.
Yeah,
the interesting thing was,
ephedra is bad. That's just legal speed.
Well, that's exactly what it is. But, you know, the interesting thing was is that people rushed out to buy it before it was taken from the market. So, you know, they've done a very good job of confusing people and getting them to believe. I mean, if you walk into a health food vitamin supplement store, you'll find somebody in a lab coat there, and the impression is that he knows what he's talking about, and it might be somebody's making $8 an hour and has no clue.
Oh, yeah. I mean, or if you go into a pharmacy, you know, any of your local big chains, half of the store is going to be devoted to supplements and cold remedies that really do nothing.
Exactly. It's a huge market. I mean, I believe the last numbers I saw is between $17 and $19 billion just on supplements. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, we're taking them, right? So what do? I mean, it's hard to eat good food. It's hard to find. It takes a lot of work to prepare.
Well, okay, I'm going to say this. It does take a lot of work, Chris, but what will happen is this. If every time you have a meal you have a piece of fruit with it, within a couple of months, every time you have a meal, you'll want that piece of fruit. Your body, this is the good thing about good nutrition is, the more you have good nutrition, the more your body craves it. It's just like exercise. The more you exercise, the more you want to do it. So if we can develop those good habits, and one of the things that I stress for the athletes, and this research came out of Fabre back in 1964, where they found people that ate more frequent meals actually didn't have as much fat. From an athlete standpoint, even if we're not worried about fat gain, if you think about eating smaller, more frequent, balanced meals, A, you're never starving, so you're more intelligent about what you eat, and B, when you're eating more well-balanced meals more frequently, there's constantly nutrients circulating in your bloodstream that your body can readily access to rebuild and reload. So from the standpoint of an athlete, and I stress this for all my athletes, they should be eating 5 or 6 times a day. Whatever their calorie content they've decided is ideal, just divide that into 5 or 6, and then start looking at every meal should have some carbs, some protein, and some fat so that they're constantly bringing in the nutrients their body needs to rebuild. The only time you would want a meal... Well, go ahead.
If I'm setting up, you know, I got to work, right? I got to work for a living. So I'm going to the office. I'll take a bag of fruit with me and some sort of salad for lunch, right? And so I'm eating, you know, a couple of oranges, a couple of apples, you know, whatever. And then at lunch I'll have a salad with some sort of protein in it, nuts or meat if I can find it, right? And that's...
Well, here's what I would suggest. Well, this is what I would suggest. A, instead of having a couple apples, a couple oranges, what I would suggest is when you have your breakfast in the morning, it's very important to eat breakfast because your body's been in a starvation state for at least 8 hours, probably longer. You want to have something that has some protein, some carbs, and some fat. So, I don't know, you might have a whole grain cereal with some skim milk on it, some raisins and nuts in it, okay? Something,
well, usually, I usually have oatmeal with honey and some whatever the fruit of the day is.
You certainly, that is going to work for you because you need the calories, but if you could throw some walnuts in there, not, you know, a bag full, but a couple tablespoons, and maybe go with raisins, because raisins have some nutrients to go with that fructose instead of the honey, okay? And then maybe a glass of skim milk, because you're getting the calcium, the magnesium, the vitamin D, plus some protein, plus some more carbohydrates. Then when you get to work, what I would take to work with me is, like, okay, let's say you have... turkey sandwich and whole wheat bread with mustard, and you put tomatoes and onions and any kind of vegetables you can think of on it to stack it up, have half that sandwich and a piece of fruit, and then 3 hours later, the other half of the sandwich, another piece of fruit, then when you get home, you're having another meal, and then at dinner, you have a smaller balanced meal, but rather than have a meal that's something like a salad with a piece of fruit, nothing wrong with that, but for the amount of calories you're burning, you would probably do better with some whole grains too, because you need those calories and you're also getting the fiber with it, and it's a little more nutritionally balanced. I guess the other thing is, what is exactly in your salad?
Well, I, you know, like I said, I don't have a lot of time in my life like most people, so I grab whatever's in the fridge, whatever vegetables we have, and then I throw nuts in it. If I, like I said, for protein, I'll throw either the walnuts, the pecans, or the sunflower seeds in it.
Well, what I would suggest is this. When I do a salad, it's not what you'd think is a typical salad. It's a bowl of vegetables, and I start with broccoli and cauliflower because they're both cruciferous vegetables that have been linked with the progression of coronary heart disease and cancer. Okay, so you start with that, and then you throw in carrots and onions and green peppers and celery and just every vegetable you can think of, then throw in some green leafy vegetables. Then I put in some beans, like kidney beans or garbanzo beans.
I do that, too, sometimes, or the chickpeas,
I guess what I'm driving at is...
What you have to do is you have to prepare this stuff either in a big batch, and that, you know, it goes bad in a day. So
Well, actually, if you... Okay, here's the tip on that one, Chris. Make those vegetables up on a Sunday, and then seal them in individual baggies, and then put them in a bigger baggie, and put them in the refrigerator, and then they won't go bad as quick. You're probably right. I mean, 4 to 5 days is the outside for vegetables to stay good once you've chopped them all up. But if you individually package them like that, and yeah, it is a lot of work, but you know what? Think about the kind of work you do for your exercise. Think about the fact that if you spend a little more time on Sunday prepping your meals for the week, it may improve your performance by 5%. Is that worth the extra time? For elite athletes, it certainly is. For most people, it means for the athlete that's training hard, it means potentially less injuries. And that's one of the big concerns with getting proper nutrition, because if your body doesn't get the nutrients it needs, it will leach it out of your muscles, tendons, bones, and then you set yourself up for an injury. And I think we all know what it feels like when you can't run.
Sure. I'll give you an example. There's an elite guy or near elite guy, age grouper in the gym with me at work, and the other day he came in with he basically twisted the top of his femur off running because he had a bunch of feed deficiency, right?
Yep. See, this is the thing. Those overtraining injuries, certainly, I mean, I can do a whole show on just recovery, because most athletes, we're motivated to train hard, but we don't want to allow for the recovery time because we feel like we're being lazy. Just as an aside, one of the things I got from a boxer 30 years ago, a trainer, he would recommend taking your heart rate every single morning. And if your heart rate is usually going to be within some zone, you know, it's going to be close every day. If it's ever more than 6 beats above your normal resting heart rate in the morning, that means your body's still trying to recover from your last workout, and no matter what you have planned, you should take a light day that day. You can still work out, but the intensity needs to be decreased because you're not fully recovered.
That's interesting. I haven't heard people using their heart rate like that before. Hey, before we go too far, Tom, give us the how we get to your website and the name of the book and how we find it and that sort of stuff.
Okay. The website is www.thomasafox.com.
With an H, Thomas, with an H?
Yes. You can also get to it from tomfoxseminars.com.
Okay.
And the name of my book is The System for Health and Weight Loss.
All right. And that has a lot of the stuff we've been talking about today?
It does. And, you know, we cover a bunch of practical things. A lot of this stuff, like, you know, you've heard it before. You know you should have more fruits and vegetables, but the thing is, you don't want to eat 4 pieces of fruit at one time. You want to have that piece of fruit with some complex carbohydrates and some protein, and you know, the more variety of foods you can get, the better chance you're going to get of getting the nutrients that you want. Now, the only time that you can have a straight-up carbohydrate meal is after a long run or a hard workout. When your muscles are glycogen depleted, you can even eat gummy bears, and your body's going to put that sugar right back into your muscles. In fact, had that situation with one of the Caps players. Great guy, had a good diet. I see him after the game, he's eating gummy bears and he's trying to hide them from me, and I go, hey, Connor, what are you doing? He goes, I'm having these gummy bears. And I go, listen, because you're getting a full spectrum of nutrition with your diet throughout the day, eating gummy bears for you after a hard workout or a game is okay, because your body's not going to turn that sugar into fat. It's going to preferentially throw it right back into your muscles within that first half hour after intense exercise. Your muscle physiology sort of changes a little bit to be much more absorbent. So I'm not recommending everybody eat gummy bears, but I am saying that for an athlete who trains really hard, getting the glycogen back into their muscles within a half an hour of that workout is paramount, and it could be a baked potato or a bagel or, you know, even white bread, something that breaks down quickly and gets back into your muscles, because then you're starting to put the glycogen back in quickly so that for your next workout, your legs are fully recharged and you feel it, you have more energy.
All right, so we're running out of time here, so let me ask you a wrap-up question, Tom.
Okay.
What would be your recommendation for the top three things for people to focus on in our audience here?
Okay. I would say focus on whole foods, real foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy. Those should be the main makeup of your diet. Protein should all be as lean as they possibly can, but if you try and eat more fruits, vegetables, and whole grains and a more wider variety of vegetables and fruits, you'll be doing well. If you can spend the time to make those smaller, more frequent meals and take them with you. Like I say, if you're taking a sandwich and 2 pieces of fruit, just cut the sandwich in half. That's 2 meals right there. But it's worth the time to do that. And then the other thing that we didn't touch on, but it's very important part of recovery, is how much time you sleep. A lot of us are pressed for time, and we tend not to get sleep, but we know that for athletes, that's a recovery time. We also now see research coming out that says if you sleep 4 or less hours a day, there's an 80% chance you're going to become obese. So
it's one of the biggest indicators for heart disease, too.
Exactly. And, you know, it totally makes sense. But for athletes, I think taking your resting heart rate in the morning, every morning, and because I know as athletes, you never want to take a light day. You're always out there trying to push yourself harder. But if your heart rate is 6 beats or more above your normal resting heart rate in the morning, you got to take a light day. You might do an active recovery where you pedal the bike easy, you do some swimming, or you just walk and until you're fully recovered, because you're beating a dead horse. If you're only getting 80% recovered and you're working hard again, then now you're only 75% recovered, and 3 weeks into it, you have an injury, and you're like, wow, how did this happen? Well, it's been coming for 3 weeks because you haven't been getting full recovery.
Yeah, so that's two. What's three?
I would say number three is there's a lot of people talk about this glycemic index, and you want high glycemic foods and low glycemic foods. If you take a carbohydrate and you eat any protein with it or any fat with it, you can throw the glycemic index out the window. Glycemic index is the foods that are like honey and baked potatoes and white bread that break down really quickly, and they recommend on some of the diets stay away from them because they raise your blood sugar level and your pancreas secretes insulin. If you have any protein with that meal or any fat with the meal, it changes the physiology of how your body digests it, so you really don't have to worry about it. But again, for athletes, if you can eat more of the whole foods that have vitamins and minerals in them that are carbohydrates, as opposed to cookies and cakes and things of that nature. I'm not saying you can't ever have them, but if you're living more on those to get the energy to do your runs, you would be much better off to eat calorically dense, nutritionally dense carbohydrate foods, fruits, vegetables, and whole grains.
What about pastas? What do you recommend for pastas?
Well, here's the deal. I would normally recommend you get whole wheat pasta, whole wheat grains, unless you're coming, as you get closer to your competition. Like if you're doing a competitive day, that day you might want to go with the white bread and the white pasta because it gets into your system faster. Fiber is a very important nutrient in that it helps sweep your system clean of a lot of the, for lack of a better word, gunk, carcinogens and stuff. But when we're looking at being completely glycogen loaded for an event, then you would want the stuff that's more white rice bread and noodles. But on a regular basis in your training, you would want the more the stuff that's a little higher fiber.
Okay. All right, we're going to have to wrap it up there. Thanks for your time. It was really interesting. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure talking to you, Chris. Thanks.
How do you feel about running your first Boston Marathon?
I am totally psyched, and I can't wait.
Why?
I think it's 10 weeks and 5 days.
Are you running on tendonitis?
I am.
Okay, so we'll have to gauge this, okay? If you have a slight head cold, would you still run?
Absolutely.
If you had a bleeding toenail, would you still run?
Yes.
All right, the tendonitis in the ankle?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what would it take, like a bloody stump?
Yeah, bloody stump. Yeah.
Death in the family? Maybe.
It has to be really close.
Like close?
That day, if it was that day. Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Newman.
All right, Chris, here's one for you. Show me a guy who's afraid to look bad, and I'll show you a guy you can beat every time. Lou Brock.
Hello, Chris Russell of Run, Run, Live. This is Jason, little brother Jason from Trilogy Running. I am not with Sean right now. He's off feeding the chickens at his house, so I'm going to leave you with two. Not only an inspirational quote, but also a food for thought quote. So, inspiration comes first. No matter which direction you start, it's always against the wind coming back. Interesting. And here's your thought of the day. When people say, I'm so tired, it's not even funny, or my head hurts so much, it's not even funny, why would it be funny in the first place? I don't know. So, good luck. See you in Atlanta. Alrighty. Goodbye.
Hello, Chris. Yeah, you already made me famous at BruceMcIntoshBlogspot.com. But since you asked inspirational messages, which I have none, the only one I've been using lately is, it's never too late to become what you might have been. Thanks. Bye.
You had to say one thing about running. What would it be?
What is that?
It's a little recording thing. My dad was like, you need to take this to school and ask people about running. And
well,
then
I think that running is probably enjoyable if you do it a lot, but it's not something I personally enjoy.
Yeah, we're in the art room. There's not a lot of runners here.
I think there are actually in that class.
Don't lie.
All right, my friends, my mid-pack maniacs, let's take this thing out. Great stuff. It's good to have friends. Thank you, folks, for running with me. I know I've gone long the last couple of episodes, so I'll try to keep this one inside my proclaimed 40-minute cap. So next weekend, I'm running the Martha's Vineyard 20-miler, and then 2 weeks after that, I'm down to Atlanta for the ING Marathon. And I really wanted to thank Jason and Sean from Trilogy Running for inviting everyone from the Ying Marathon back to Sean's house for a Southern Luau barbecue afterwards. But make sure you send an RSVP to them at trilogyrunning.com so Sean makes enough vegetarian chili for all of us. It's really great of you guys to take in the community like this and make everyone feel welcome with that down-home Southern hospitality. Thanks, guys. Or, you know, you can call their listener comment line. They have one of those, and let them know you're coming and let them know what kind of beer you'd like to drink, all right? And don't forget to sign up for my hometown race, the Groton Road Race in Groton, Massachusetts, or as they would say, Massachusetts, the Groton Road Race at grotonroadrace.com. Also, our friend Gordon Scott from the island of Tiree in Scotland is making an expedition to Everest. You can't make this stuff up. And is raising money for a great charity on his blog. So go to www.tyree.blogspot.com. And Tyree is like tire with an extra E. So there's no Y's. T-I-R-E-E. And help him out. He's a big supporter of the community, so he deserves our support. Hey, I've got one of those dial-in numbers, too. So why don't you call my dial-in number with an inspirational comment, question, race you want us to know about, or some charity you're collecting for. You know, leave us a short message, short being the operative word, and we'll get you on and we'll squeeze it in. All right. I've got already got another great interview in the can, and it's a good one, and I'll be putting an extra show in sometime early next week. Going to double up on the shows. It's another nutritional one. It's really good. And I'm thinking it's going to be the Clint Eastwood-themed show, so stay tuned if I can work that out. After that, I have met a guy called Daryl from I Run In Your Shirt. He's lined up. I'm not sure what that's all about, but it sounds interesting. And Buddy and I look forward to meeting you all soon, and we will see you out there. Music today is by the Marauders, and it's called She Put a Curse on Me, a little rockabilly. I like it. It rocks.
Take my trouble with a shot of gin. I stop feeling good, gotta do it again. I made a mini mellow, gave me time to think, and then a bartender come along and spill my drink. I go to light up my cigarette, but I can't get a flame, cause the match is wet. She put a curse on me.
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 She don't let me be that girl. Put a curse on me. I got my check, I lost my job. I bought a new car, but it got robbed. I go see a shrink for some good advice. He said he got a good girl, you better treat her nice. Cow, if the milk is free, she put a curse on me.
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 She won't let me be that girl. Put a curse on me.
Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, Run, Live, the podcast for all your running needs.